can thank me later. You may be a little disappointed after week one I wore the Superman shirt. Week two I had the Batman shirt. And, well, if I decide to do this, he don't wear a shirt. And I decided that's not a good look. So I went with the green shirt, and I swiped my son's little Hulk Infinity character to kind of help us out with this sermon. There's a lot in that clip that I want to kind of run through real quick. And first of all, you probably missed the best superpower of all right there. Black Widow manages to ride on the back of the most fearsome creature around. And when she gets to the end, crashing through trees, rolling across rocks, she's not dirty. She doesn't have a scratch and not a hair out of place. Tell me you would love to have that kind of superpower. But I want to go with what she had to say. She couldn't have the man she desired. She needed the man she needed. You see, the character that kind of fits into the background of what we're going to talk about is this guy that we call the Incredible Hulk, also known as Dr. Bruce Banner. And if you think the story sounds familiar, it is, because it's actually taken from Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. On one side, you have the nice, meek, mild-mannered doctor, and on the other side, you have this fearsome creature who his skin is so thick, bullets won't pierce it. He is incredibly strong. And in the words of Tony Stark, also known as Iron Man, he's got breathtaking anger management issues. And at the end of that clip, she tells him to go be a hero, which is kind of ironic because Hulk does some heroic things, but he's not really a hero. He's kind of known more for the out-of-control rage episodes. And in the end, usually when he's on the scene, he causes more destruction than he does good. Now, that kind of fits really nice into who we're studying, because we are taking a look at the man, Samson. And I want to let you know, it sounds like I'm kind of ragging on Samson because of all the problems that he had, but you do understand that while he might not have done the things the way God desired them to be done, at the point in time Samson shows up, he's the man that was needed. And we're going to look a little bit at why over the next couple of weeks, because I believe Samson was put here not just to be a hero for Israel, but to be an object lesson for us. And so this morning, as we begin to continue talking about Samson, we do understand there are some good things about him, because after all, he did end up in the Hall of Faith. Remember when we hung all those pictures up there? He made the cut in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32, and it says, "And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets." So he's there. So apparently he must have done something that God thought was worthy, because he winds up in this Hall of Faith even with all of his issues, which is encouraging for me. Because if he's got all of these issues and he can make the cut, then maybe there's a little small hope that with the issues that I have in my life, that I can still live this Christian life in a way that God will count me faithful. And, well, there are some lessons that we've already looked at. We looked at the fact that Samson literally had a promising start. He was a promised child to a barren couple, and they told them up front, he's going to do great things for Israel. And there's only three requirements. All he's got to do is don't drink, don't cut your hair, and don't come in contact with dead things. That's it. And we've already found out he's having some problems with that, and that the problems come from the fact that, well, Samson has some serious decision-making problems in his process of making decisions. He had issues. Remember last week how his thought process went? Probably because it's the same way we do things. I want it, I deserve it, and I can handle it. Thus, God must be okay with it, right? And we see Samson started down this process, and if you think that goes away, that's how he lived his entire life. As you begin to even looking at today's lesson, underneath that, you will still see the same three issues there. I want it. I deserve it. I can handle it. Therefore, I can do it. But this morning, we're going to turn our attention to the what next. Where do we go from here? And to go from here, we have to talk about the idea of pride. Now, what is pride? Here's the Webster Dictionary definition. A feeling of deep pleasure or satisfaction derived from one's own achievements, the achievement of those who one is closely associated with, or from qualities or possessions that are widely admired. Okay? So that's pride. And we have done a lot of lessons on pride. As a matter of fact, we just left the zoo behind us. Remember when we stopped at the frog habitat? We talked about the idea of being puffed up, and we talked about our pride issues. So this is not a lesson on pride, but I do want to kind of remind you, Solomon had a lot to say about it. In Proverbs chapter 11, verse 2, when pride comes, then comes disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. In Proverbs 13:10, it says, where there is strife, there is pride. That's an interesting observation. But wisdom is found in those who take advice. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall, says Proverbs chapter 16, verse 18. And Proverbs chapter 29, 23 says, pride brings a person low, but a lowly spirit gains honor. So there is this idea, and we get it, pride's an issue. I mean, all of us struggle with pride. I mean, I don't care who you are, whether you're the smallest child or the most mature adult, pride gets the best of you. And like I said, this isn't really a lesson on pride. It's more of an equation that pride feeds into, because what we get is pride, plus then we have anger issues, things that get us upset, things that get us mad. And then we mix in the idea of unforgiveness, where I'm not willing to move past my pride, I'm not willing to move past my anger, and so I'm going to keep holding it. And eventually those three things come together to kind of turn us into the same kind of green monster we see with the Incredible Hulk, because we become focused on revenge. You've never had this moment, have you, where somebody's done you something wrong and you just want to get eaten? You know, that's what revenge is. Revenge is the action of inflicting hurt or harm on someone for an injury or a wrong suffered at their hands. So somebody did something to me, so I get the opportunity to do something back so we can balance the scales. Revenge is just how we see getting justice. I mean, even in how we do our prison terms here in this area, in this country. I'm all for prison if people have done things wrong, but you do understand. We're just trying to make them pay a price. How many times have you heard it? Pay your debt to society. Balance the scales. Make it even. You did this, so we get to do this to you. This idea of revenge runs through our entire culture. And it also causes some big issues. Because, you see, Samson continually sought revenge, and eventually that revenge led him to making more bad choices. And then in the long term, it kind of tore him down, and eventually this idea of revenge, it turned the man that God chose to lead Israel into nothing more than a giant bully that was just trying to throw his weight around. And what we're going to look at when we look through Judges chapter 15, these episodes of vengeance, what I want you to see is the downward spiral that this is bringing Samson through. And more importantly, what I want you to see is how the same attitude that can bring into our lives of seeking vengeance can cause that same downward spiral for us in our spiritual life. Now, there are three episodes of revenge that Samson goes through, and the first one is found in verses 1 through 6. And I have to tell you, I read this verse and I chuckle, because this sounds like something that I've been living in those times. It involved fire, so I might have been involved in it. But this is what it says about the lesson. Later on, so we're past the Samson left his wife because she manipulated him and told everybody the answer to his riddle. So he gets mad at her and goes off, and he's gone for a while. So later on, at the time of wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat. How would you like that to be your honey, can you forgive me present? I'm going to bring you a goat. I guess it was popular back then. I don't know. I went shopping for a goat. But he brought a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, I am going to my wife's room, but her father would not let him go. I was so sure you hated her, he said, that I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. We would have to have a long conversation with Dad. Seriously? Take her instead. Samson said to them, this time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. So he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs, and he fastened torches to every pair of tails. He lit the torches and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks of the standing grain together with the vineyards and the olive groves. When the Philistines asked who did this, they were told, Samson, the Tenemite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his companion. So the Philistines went and burned her and her father to death. That's kind of harsh, isn't it? I mean, so in the end of chapter 14, again, Samson left his wife. I mean, he went home to brood because he lost his bet. Poor baby. He shouldn't have made the bet to start with. So he goes home because he feels like he's been disgraced, but now he's back on the scene, and he's decided, I can't live without her. I miss her. So he's back. And he wants her back, but she's moved on, but Dad offers him the consolation prize. Take little sister. Again, long conversation with Dad at some point. I don't know what he was thinking, but maybe we'll make that a Father's Day sermon at some point. Don't give your daughters to Samson would be a good title for that. But Samson starts off with this idea, I have the right to get even with the Philistines. And I hear that statement, and I really want to say, really? You have a right to get even with the Philistines? What gives you the right to get even with the Philistines? After all, doesn't revenge always start this way? It starts with rights. Because you did this to me, I have the right to do this. But I want you to look at the situation. Samson threw the party, did he not? His decision. Samson made the bet. I didn't hear anybody else in the scriptures we looked at last week say, hey, Samson, why don't you tell him this? Samson created the arrogant riddle about the lion that he shouldn't even been near and the honey that he shouldn't have been eating. Samson put his wife in the awkward spot of having to explain to him that, you know what, if I don't do this and these guys that live in my country are going to really make things bad for my family. So he kind of put his wife in the spot where she had to choose between her family and Samson, which is never a good spot to put your wife in, but Samson did that. Samson killed and stole to pay his debt. That was Samson's choice. Samson left his wife. Nobody told him to go. But now he's only concerned with his rights. Whose fault is this entire mess? It's Samson's. It's not the Philistines. I mean, the Philistines didn't create this issue. This is a total Samson problem. And the other thing that I find interesting is it says, because you did this to me, who ultimately got punished? It was his wife and her family. But you understand, when I begin to look at my life and I begin to look at my rights and what I am able to do, and I look out across it, then it's very easy for me to say, it's your fault I'm in this situation, therefore I am going to get even with you by doing something else. And that's where we end up in this situation. And so Samson comes up with this really wild idea, and I don't know how long it took him to catch 300 foxes or how he went about doing it, but he ties them together and he burns their crops down. But you see what really happens is we just get violence for violence. Because then they, in turn, because they burned he burned the crops, they burned his family, and then Samson says, you know what? I can one-up that one. Listen to this in verses 7 through 12. Samson said to them, so now he is facing the Philistines, since you have attacked like this, I swear I won't stop until I get my revenge on you. He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. Time out. He's killing again. So you understand what he's supposed to do next, right? Yeah, we'll talk about that in a few minutes. And he slaughtered many of them. Then he went down and stayed in a cave in the rock of Edom. And the Philistines went up and camped in Judah, spreading out near Leah. The people of Judah asked, why have you come to fight us? We have come to take Samson prisoner, they answered, to do to him as he had done to us. See the cycle? It just keeps going and going and going. Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Edom and said to Samson, don't you realize that the Philistines rule over us? Really? Wasn't Samson supposed to be their leader? Wasn't Samson their hero? They didn't look at Samson as a hero, did they? They had a much different opinion of who Samson was. What have you done to us? I love his answer. He answered, I merely did to them what they did to me. Then he said, we have come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines. So they kill his wife, so Samson goes on this vicious rampage. And again, remember, the idea behind a Nazirite is you're not supposed to come in contact with a dead thing. When you kill something, then that's a dead thing. And if it's something that you couldn't help, then at the very least, Samson was supposed to go where? To the temple and have his head shaved and offer a sacrifice to God to acknowledge the fact that he broke his commitment. But where do we find Samson at the end of his outbreak? He's sitting in a cave, whining over the fact that he didn't get his way. Just sitting there. And so Samson goes on this rampage and he kills a bunch of people. And this is his logic. Since you attack like this. Now remember, what did they do? Well, they killed his wife. Who, by the way, remember, he left. Okay? And they killed his wife. And so he says, what you have done to me. Really, what did they do to him? Not a whole lot. I mean, he obviously didn't care much about the situation. But when I began to say, you've done this to me, now I'm going to get my revenge. You notice the missing remorse there? He didn't even mention his wife or his family or the thousands of dollars worth of crops and the hardship he's caused all the people. None of that matters at this point. What matters? I'm going to get even with you. I'm going to do a little revenge. I'm going to take out my frustration on you. I'm going to take out my anger on you. I'm going to let the big green monster loose, and man, we're just going to do destruction. And well, what he tells them is, I merely did to them what they did to me. That's his justification in what he's doing. Now, we've never done this as Christians, right? Somebody cuts you off in traffic, and you lay on that horn. Really, what did the horn accomplish? Maybe you scared them half to death. I mean, did you really beep at them because you thought you were going to hit them? Or was it just the most convenient thing you could find to let them know you weren't happy with what they did? Which was it? Yeah. Probably number two. You know, now if you were beeping at them so you didn't run into them, that's a good thing. But we do this. We do this in line when we're standing in the express line, the person in front of us. You know, they have 13 items when the sign clearly says 12. Can't you count? Seriously? But what do? Well, while they're checking out, look at, really? That doesn't help. Where are you going to go? I mean, looking at your watch isn't going to make them move any faster, but we want everybody to know we are displeased with what's going on, and so we're bringing attention to our displeasure, and I'm bringing these things up because these are things that I know I struggle with as I go through it. We want people to realize you've upset me, and because you've upset me, I have the right to be upset, and because I am upset, I have the right to do, and then we start filling in the blanks. I want it. I deserve it, and I can handle it, and now guess what? I'm justified by what I'm doing. See the way Samson begins to think about his life? But this time, Samson's little temper tantrum has some serious problems. The very people God had chose him to protect are now in danger. Because Samson is all set on revenge, the people that he is supposed to be out there leading, the people who he's supposed to be the hero for, they are now in danger because now the Philistines are getting an army together to come and invade because they're coming after Samson. That's kind of bad, isn't it? You think as a church sometimes we get so set up on making things even in the world or fair in the world that we put the very mission that God gave us at risk? Because I want it to be right. I want it to be fair. I want it to be justified. We don't want justice. Because if we had justice, we know what justice looks like. But we want to tell everybody, we have a right to be mad. We have a right to be forgiving. We have a right to reach out. Why? Because the person that paid the price for us, that's what he said. So Samson's taken his mission, and he's forgotten all about what he's there for, and he's out there now, and he says, I'm going to put him in danger. But he's got a plan. Give the man a little credit. See, they were willing to hand him over. And so Samson says, agreed. Tie me up. Just agree that you won't kill me. Let them kill me. And of course, the Israelites come, okay, sounds good to us, solves our problem. They get Samson, you know, he goes off. Do you find it a problem that they're about to hand their leader over, and to their knowledge, they're going to get him killed? And they have no problem at all. And that's because they have a very low opinion of the person God sent to lead them. He's a nuisance. He's a bother. He's causing problems not because he's doing the right thing, but because he's arrogant and selfish, and he's looking at things in such a way that they're kind of like, we'd rather hand you over and let the world take you out than have to deal with you. And so that's what they do. And we head into our next little area there. And literally, Samson becomes a boneheaded bully. This is what it says in verses 13 through 17. Agreed, they answered. We will only tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you. So they bound him with two new ropes, and they led him from a rock, from the rock. He approached Lehi, and the Philistines came toward him shouting. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax. The bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, please note that, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. Then Samson said, with a donkey's jawbone, I have made a donkey of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men. When he finished speaking, he threw the jawbone away, and the place was called Ramah Lehi. So they hand him over. And in a scene that would be jealous of the 1970s Incredible Hulk series, where they got Bruce Banner all tied up and his eyes turn green and you hear the music and he begins to grow, God helps him. He gives him power. And the ropes, it says, became like charred flax. It just kind of fell off of him. And I wonder if his shirt ripped. Wouldn't that be just kind of cool to have the bull buff image come out? And so Samson is now full of the Holy Spirit. And well, he kills 1,000 men, but who does Samson give credit for? Let me read this. With a donkey's jawbone, I made donkeys out of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men. Who gets the credit for the kill again? Samson. Same man that killed the lion, right? Really? Samson won. Or did he? Because did you notice what he did in order to win again? He picked up a fresh donkey's jawbone. Now, the last time I checked, that would be yet another dead thing that he's grabbing a hold of. And then he kills another 1,000 or so people. And so he's got another 1,000 dead bodies to deal with. So where should Samson be when the battle's over? Back down at the temple, once again, getting his head shaved, offering a sacrifice to let God know, I understand I made a commitment, but I had to break the commitment, so I am rededicating myself to you. You see how the image would look different if every time Samson was forced to kill, forced to break the commitment, if he also took the other side of the commitment and went down and made the sacrifices and got his head shaved, then we would have never had the Samson and Delilah episode because his hair wouldn't have been there. But because Samson just kept the eye mentality. Ha, look at me. He even made a joke out of it. They thought they were going to make a donkey out of me. I took a donkey's head and I made a donkey out of them. He sounds like Maui from Moana. Look at what I did. He probably even made a song out of it. I don't know. But he's got this idea. And so I want to turn away from Samson and come into our world for a little bit because we too, as Christians, we suffer with revenge issues, making things fair and even. And so I want to kind of, before we finish Samson's story today, I want to talk about how we deal with it and how God desires us to look at it, because we understand we should leave revenge to God. How do I know? Easy. God said so. This is what he says. God says in Deuteronomy chapter 32, 35, it is mine to avenge. So when you decide to become the effort of vengeance, then you're taking God's job. You've made yourself God. I will repay in due time. In other words, not when you want it, not when it's convenient for you, not when you think it's supposed to happen, not to make you feel better. It says, In due time, their foot will slip, their day of disaster is near, and their doom rushes upon them. God says when it comes to revenge, especially, and this is written straight to the nation of Israel, let me take care of it. Let me be God and you be you. I got this. I see the big picture. I see all the pieces of the puzzle. You know, Jesus condemned this idea. Matthew chapter 5, verses 38 through 42 read, "You have heard it said, an eye for an eye, and a tooth for tooth." There's the vengeance thing. We like to quote that verse, by the way. Well, Jesus said an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Well, put it back in context, folks, because this is what he really says. You have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, then turn the other cheek also. If anyone wants to sue and take your shirt, you should give him his coat as well. Give him your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, then you should go 2 with them. Give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you. Man, Jesus didn't like this idea of revenge. He even took it another step and said, those that you're seeking revenge on, we should be generous to them. In the book of Isaiah, they call that heaping coals upon their head, and it's not about burning them. It's about making them understand, I'm willing to do whatever it takes because you're valuable to me. And you're valuable to me because God says you're valuable to him. And so he comes into this idea, and Jesus said, don't do it. You've heard it said all these years. Take an eye for an eye. Get even. A tooth for a tooth. Take out your pound of flesh for the pound of flesh. He says, no, don't do it. If you're going to be my follower, you're going to have to back off from that mentality a little bit because understand the mission is bigger than what you want to happen. It's more important than revenge. And just in case you think that it kind of died with the first century church, Paul also addresses it. Paul, actually quoting from Deuteronomy in verses 12 through 19, Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. See, this is the problem. Every time we want to make it right, every time we want to fix it, every time we want to make it even and justice, you do understand we're doing damage to our own mission. We're no better than the Incredible Hulk, who can't control his own rage, and he comes out, and there he is. And like I said, she looks at him and says, go be a hero. And did you see the smirk on that monster's face? He's like, yeah, I know how to be a hero. Hulk smash, because that's what he does. And that's what he did, if you know that movie. He just went about in a rage. But here's the thing. This idea of revenge, eventually, it leaves you empty. They say revenge is a dish best served cold. Well, understand, when you're all done with revenge, it was that thing when you watch the Incredible Hulk, and when he was all done smashing what he did, he calmed down, and eventually he transformed back into the man, and Bruce Banner was exhausted. Same thing for Samson. Verses 18 and 19, back over in Judges. Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord. Oh, now you call out to God. Now God's important to you. He cried out to the Lord, at least he acknowledged God, you have given your servant this victory. Did he sound much like a servant before? I don't think so. This great victory. Must I now die? Ah, there's the Samson I know and love. He's lecturing God because must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? But here's the cool thing. God answered his prayer. Then God opened up a hollow place in Lehi, and the water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned, and he was revived. So the spring was called En Hakor, and it is still there in Lehi. So Samson has finished all of his rage. And again, where should he be? Back at the temple. Where is he? Sitting around complaining to God how it's not fair. Man, really, God just saved your life. And now you're complaining that it's not fair? Hey, Christians, God laid down his life for us. And now we're complaining it's not fair? I think I got a good bargain on this deal. Christ came and gave his life for me, and all he asked in return was for my I busted a broken life. See, God isn't interested in revenge. Restoration, not revenge. See, revenge seeks to tear down the little bit that's left. Restoration seeks to build up that which we have still left that we can build on. Revenge seeks to destroy. Restoration seems to fix. Okay? Revenge is all about what I want. Restoration is all about what you need. You see the difference? So let me ask you something, church. Which should we be interested in? Restoring the lost or seeking revenge on a lost world? Unfortunately, a lot of times we answer the question, we want to make it even. We want to make it right. We want to make it fair. God says, I want to make it right. But to make it right, the price tag is going to be really, really, really expensive. It means I'm going to have to take my rights and set them aside for God's restoration plan. Samson never got that. We're going to look at the downward spiral continue next week. Samson never got this idea that it is all about restoration. He was not there to defeat the Philistines. Defeating the Philistines would have just been what happened in the process. What was he there to do? To lead Israel back into a relationship with God. That was Samson's job. He wasn't there just to be the military person that could slaughter a bunch of men. He was supposed to be the inspirational leader that Israel could look at and say, I see God, and I'm going to follow that. But notice where he got them. We're going to hand you over to the world because you know what? You're more problem than they are. We'd rather have the Philistines rule over us than you. It's just a lot to think about. When I look at my life, I wonder if I push people the same way because I just seek for what's good for Barry and not what's good for God.